And some days are better than others, and this is one of those better than other days. I got to tell you, Don McLean, an American singer-songwriter, you know all about him, and I'd love for you to know more. We have him on the phone with us right now. Don, how are you this morning, sir?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us this morning. You have a show on the 6th coming up in San Juan Capistrano at the Coach House. When someone sees you live, it's really, and I'm not trying to blow smoke in your face, Don, it is like magic. It's like listening to a poet up there.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you, and I know that our audience does as well. What can we expect on the 6th in San Juan Capistrano at the Coach House?
Well, I have a combination of things that I focus on. One is the flow of the songs. The other is hitting the notes and singing well. My mentors were not people like Bob Dylan and people that are more blues-oriented. Mine were more in the Marty Robbins, Elvis Presley, Sinatra, people that you know, sang,
right.
You know, sang melodies that they had to hit the notes.
Right. And to you, from my point of view, when I hear you, I think that phrasing is so important in your music.
Well, that was all part of what they did. You know, getting the idea of the song across, getting the essence of the song across without a whole lot of, you know, extra useless notes, but just unadorned, but very as beautiful as possible.
Yeah.
So there's that, and then there's, you know, what I might or might not say in the show, and I don't do the same show every night ever. So
right.
I've done a different show every night for 50 years. I've worked very hard at trying to master the idiom that I'm in rather than just stick to a script.
Right. You essentially feel the crowd out and you sing accordingly.
Yes. I can tell sometimes that they would rather hear some more intimate things.
Right.
So, you know, I'll do some of those and work through till I can get to the rock and roll stuff. And so it's, you know, I feel like I'm there to entertain them, but also to make them have feelings and get into my world. And I kind of sing the American songbook. You know, I've had some hits that were not songs that I wrote. I haven't had many hits, but a couple of them, Since I Don't Have You and Crying, were written by other people, and Crying was number one all over the world. And I kind of sing the songbook that really is the American songbook.
Right. And if I can share a personal story with you, I'm riding in the car with my mom as a kid, and she was a big Perry Como fan. And
mm-hmm.
and I Love You So comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And mom turns to me and goes, you know, that's a Don McLean song. And I'm not even kidding. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. What went behind the writing of it? It's such a beautiful song. What was behind the writing of that? Was there someone in particular in mind? Tell me about And I Love You So.
Well, And I Love You So, I don't remember if there was anyone in mind. I don't think so. What I was trying to do was write a song from the period of popular music, the 40s and 50s, when songwriters wrote songs for singers. That's how it worked. You know, singers didn't write their own songs.
Right.
And so I was trying to write a song like an Irving Berlin would write or something like that. And I just lucked out. But I wanted it to sing well. You know, one of the things is being a singer, that's why the release. And da, 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 dee, da, 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 da. You have to have a moment when the singer can really sing, you know.
Right.
And not always sing these. The problem with a lot of the songs in the folk pop vein today is that there's a little connect the dots thing going on where everybody has to sing a word with a note, and sometimes you have to let the singer fly, you know. And so that was brought by Perry Como, was brought to Perry Como by Chet Atkins, who had been following my career, such as it was in 1975. I'd only been around a few years, but he was a real supporter of mine. And you know, I would see him frequently when I would go to Nashville. I have lunch with him or something, and I saw him at the end of his life. And he was very sick. He only lived a few more weeks, and he asked if he could see me. And it was the most beautiful thing. At the end of this time, he said, "I'm very glad I got to know you." Wow. And I just was so touched.
And I love you so. The people ask me how I've lived till now. I tell them I don't know. I guess they understand how lonely life has been. But life began again the day you took my hand. And yes, I know how lonely life can be. The shadows follow me, and the night won't set me free. But I don't let the evening get me down. Your thoughts are just for me. You set my spirit free. I'm happy that you do. The book of life is brief, and once a page is read, all but love is dead. That is my belief. And yes, I know how loveless life can be. The shadows follow me, and the night won't set me free. But I don't let the evening bring me down. Now that you're around me, and I love you so. The people ask me how I've lived till now. I tell them I don't know.
Your history, your father died, if you don't mind me bringing this up, your father passed away when you were very young, and you kept a promise to him to go to school.
Yes, I did.
How did that turn out?
Well, that was one of the better moves I made. My school, Iona College in New Rochelle, has not been all that gracious to me. So I'm not a big fan of the school. But in those days, and also the Irish Christian Brothers have had a terrible scandal, you know, with the sex abuse and all this stuff. So it's a little bit sad, really, and annoying that these people would do this kind of thing. But nonetheless, in those days, it was different, and I got a very good education there. It was a kind of a place that would give a degree, and, you know, it was a good college. I think it was, in those days, better than some of these bigger name schools today that people are bribing to get into, and I don't think they're worth a damn, tell you the truth.
Right.
If I may say this, the political correctness has forbidden real honest discourse on college campuses. Many people complain that you don't even have comedians go to these schools anymore because they're going to offend somebody.
Right.
And the idea when you go to see a comedian, say, I know I'm going to be offended, so let's just have some fun, you know.
Right. That used to be the purpose of college, was to hear opposing viewpoints or something
Well, that's so true. But when I was at Iona in the 1960s, speakers would come. I saw Muhammad Ali speak when he was had his license taken away to box. And I saw H. Rapp Brown, speak, who was a Black Panther. And people were angry about it, but they, you know, brought him there to speak. So we had all sorts of opposing views. Robert Kennedy spoke there.
My audience wouldn't forgive me if I didn't ask you about what is, to me, one of the greatest anthems in music history. I'm speaking, of course, of American Pie. And did you have any idea of the effect that song would have on music?
Well, I was trying to write each song that I write is an effort to do something, to invent something, really, that I have a preconceived notion of. Hmm. So it's not like I just sit down and take the guitar and say, hey, I'm going to sing another Don McLean song, like the Rolling Stones have the wonderful ability to crank out Stones songs, you know, and they got that same swing and that same shuffle and all the things that they do so beautifully. I don't do that. I kind of invent and I think of an idea, concept, and then figure out how I'm going to do it. Sometimes I'm more successful than others. American Pie was just I wanted a big song about our big country, but I didn't want to write it, "This Land Is Your Land," or this kind of like "The Power and the Glory," this type of thing that Phil Oakes wrote. I wanted to write a unique song that was looking at the country I try to see things from a totally different perspective than you might normally see it, because I listen to everything. Because I know what people are saying.
If I can, with that statement, circle back around to American Pie, the song itself for me was almost like defining a loss of innocence in a time where the day the music... Let me just give you the line. The day that I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. And it's a loss for me. It felt like a loss of innocence for the country.
I was thinking about it the other day. Buddy Holly's death and the death of the Big Bopper and Ritchie Valens was a very big moment for me. I was 14 years old and a paper boy. And I carried this burden with me of sorrow for a long time. And everybody else said, well, so what? You know, it doesn't really matter. It's just a rock and roll singer. Who cares, you know?
Right.
I was in love with Buddy Holly and his music. I mean, I really was. It was a love affair of some kind. And so I lost someone I loved. And I carried that. And then when, you know, then suddenly my father died. So I was in a very deep depression. And then suddenly Kennedy got killed, and the whole country was as depressed as I was. So we were all on the same page. It's funny, but and I kept thinking always, I'd go back and back to these moments. And that's what I was able to capture in that song. I finally found a way to express myself and to catch that, which was not easy. I had to come up with a concept, as I say, in order to do that. You just can't talk about it. You know, you've got to find a way to bring it to life. So the song actually brings to life the feelings that we had in the early 60s when all this stuff was going on, and many personal things were going on for me.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love, and do you have be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone, but that's not how it used to be. When the jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. King was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown, the courtroom was adjourned, no verdict was returned, and while Lennon read a book on Marx, the quartet practiced in the park, and we sang dirges in the dark. The day the music died, we were singing. The day that I die. Help the skelter in the summer swelter, the birds flew off with a fallout shelter, 8 miles. miles high and falling fast. It landed foul on the grass. The players tried for a forward pass with the jester on the sidelines in a cast. Now the halftime air was sweet perfume while the sergeants played a marching tune. Clenched in fists of rage, no angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight. The day the music died, he was singing bye bye Miss American Pie. I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news, but she just smiled and turned away. I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken, and the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died, and they were singing bye-bye Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry, and them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. They were singing bye-bye Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die.
Another beautiful line from me in music is Roberta Flack and strumming my pain with his fingers, killing me softly.
The whole story of the killing me softly is really the Lori Lieberman's story. And she is going to be telling that story more as she goes around and does interviews for a new album that she has out. But, basically, the writers of the song used her reminiscences and her poetry and her diary entries to inform the writing of the lyrics, and they have been reluctant to admit that. Although they did admit it in the beginning. You know, they were very, because they were all together. There's a news story about the three of them together talking about exactly how the song was written, and it's her story to a T. Later on, they changed that in order to sort of squeeze her influence out. But fortunately, there are newspaper, you know, stories that have all three of them together talking about this.
My understanding was that she wrote in her diary about after hearing you sing Empty Chairs.
That's her story, yes.
Okay. And again, I've been curious about this my whole life. What was your draw to Vincent van Gogh? What was it about Vincent that attracted you enough to write such a beautiful song?
Well, you know, again, it was just like luck. You know, I always, of all the famous painters, because I'm not an intellectual, you know, I am a free thinker, but I'm not an intellectual.
Some would argue that, by the way.
But, you know, I suppose as long as you come out with some sort of a product that is intellectual, that you're an intellectual, but I'm not. But I always knew about him. Everybody did. It was almost like, you know, you knew about Van Gogh and you knew about some character on television. It was almost like he was a character of some sort. You know, you saw the ear and the hair, you know, head wrapped in the sad look and the basic and very emotional. If you see them live, there's a ton of paint on those paintings.
Right.
I mean, it's really thick. You know, some of the floral things that he does are almost like putting on a clay. There's so much paint on those. And really the 3D effect. It's wonderfully immediate kind of emotional attachment that anybody would make to this. Right. So he was the perfect... I read a book about him and the fact that his brother wrote this book, and it was about the fact that he had an illness, and the brother had the same illness. So I thought, you know, well, you know, everybody always thought he was lovelorn and cut his ear off. You know, that was the story. Right. And I think I'm going to write about him just because I've always, you know, known him. And I looked at the painting, The Starry Night, which is his American Pie, if you will.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I said, that's him right there. Everything, the colors, the circularity, the wind, the air, everything. So I used the painting to tell me what to write. And it did, and that's how it happened.
Starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen. Did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you. But still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night. Portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget, like the strangers that you've met. The ragged men in ragged clothes, a silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never.
We are speaking with Don McLean, absolute legend in rock and roll and American music. Forget it, it gets better every day. And he's got a show October 6th here at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. If you're looking for ticket information, call me here at 949-715-5936. We'll dial you into the right spot. Don, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, I enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, and we will look forward to seeing you at the Coach House. And let me ask you just a personal favor. If you're ever here in the Orange County area and you'd like to come into the show, I'd love to sit across from you and we'd chat and play music all day long.
Well, I might do that sometime.
I'd love to have you in, Don. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don McLean.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.